Welcome to the Revital Health Podcast, where we explore the exciting intersection of modern science, ancestral wisdom, and personalized health optimization. I'm your host, Jodi DeVal, naturopath, integrative medicine expert, and founder of Revital Health Clinic in Perth, Western Australia. Each episode, we'll dive deep into cutting-edge therapies, groundbreaking research, and practical strategies to help you live your best life, having plenty of fun along the way. Whether you're keen to supercharge your energy, balance your hormones, or discover the latest biohacking trends, you've come to the right place. If you love what you hear, don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow so you never miss a moment with world-leading experts and game-changing insights. It's time to unlock your full health potential. Let's go!
Revital Health is a proud member of the Health Optimization Network. Health Optimization Medicine and Practice is a 501c3 nonprofit on a mission to educate doctors and practitioners on how to optimize for health rather than treating disease. If you're interested in becoming a practitioner or donating, head over to homehope.org. Revital Health Clinic is the first and only of its kind, exclusive health optimization clinic in Australia with state-of-the-art health technology protocols and personalized care, with compounded medicines made specifically for your testing individualities. To find out more, head to revitalhealth.com.au.
Could mitochondria, not neurotransmitters, hold the key to mental health? Well, in this episode of Revital Health Podcast, I sit down with Dr. Matthew Bernstein, clinical psychiatrist and CEO of Accord, and one of the world's leading voices in metabolic psychiatry. With over two decades of clinical experience, Dr. Bernstein is redefining psychiatric care by addressing the metabolic roots of mental illness, from insulin resistance to mitochondrial dysfunction, and he explains how energy production, circadian rhythm, and nutrition directly shape brain function and how we can harness these insights for lasting recovery. Very, very exciting episode. So we learn why every mental illness may have a metabolic component, how ketogenic and metabolic therapies are shifting outcomes in schizophrenia, bipolar, and depression, the seven mechanisms by which ketones protect the brain, and key biomarkers to monitor, insulin, HbA1c, BHB, CGM data, and how clinicians can safely integrate metabolic psychiatry into modern practice. So whether you're a practitioner, a patient, or simply just health curious, like we all are, this conversation will change how you think about the brain and the body that powers it. All right, welcome to the show, Dr. Matthew Bernstein. It is an absolute pleasure to talk to you today about metabolic psychiatry. I'm very excited.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, amazing. So I always start the podcast with your journey. So it's something that I feel that we connect really well to in terms of stories and what brought you to the point of where you're at now and in such a huge paradigm shift of field. And it's incredible work that you're doing. And you've organized the first ever public conference in 2023 in metabolic psychiatry. And so what brought you to this very, very interesting field?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is a bit of a journey for me and definitely a bit of a personal story. So I'm glad you asked, because I agree. It's important for people to understand the context. So, you know, I was a pretty traditionally trained psychiatrist, you know, 4 years of medical school, 4 years of psychiatry residency. I worked on an inpatient psychiatry unit at McLean Hospital. It's part of Harvard, treating people with severe mental illness, which has always been sort of my passion. People with schizophrenia, bipolar. You know, I think we were able to help people quite a bit in those acute crises, but I was always concerned that we weren't really seeing people get full recovery from these conditions. You know, we could get them out of the acute crisis, but then, you know, people would get stuck on these big medication regimens and not really get back to their full level of functioning. And we would call it a success to say the person wasn't continuing to get hospitalized all the time, but they would still have symptoms. They wouldn't be able to work. They wouldn't be able to often even live independently or have relationships. And, you know, that really didn't feel like a success.
Yeah.
I then was pretty influenced by the work of Robert Whittaker. He wrote this book called Anatomy of an Epidemic about, sort of critical of the way psychiatry is done. And I was really pretty impressed by the rigor of that research. So I was already pretty skeptical of sort of what I was doing. And then we had this very intense personal situation where two of our children, we have three kids, all boys, and two of them at ages 12 and 14 came down with very acute onset out of the blue, very severe depression, OCD, and physical symptoms all at once. And they went from being happy, well-adjusted kids to not even being able to go to school, being suicidal, like really, really severe symptoms, unable to read, even though they were avid readers beforehand, their brains weren't working.
Oh my goodness.
And the traditional paths that we knew about looked very psychiatric. We were taking them to good psychiatric clinicians and therapists, and they were getting not only no benefit from that, it was actually making them worse. So that was a really, difficult reckoning for myself and my wife, who's a psychologist, and we really started looking outside of mainstream medicine for solutions, sort of found our way to functional medicine, eventually figured out that they had autoimmune encephalitis due to tick-borne illness, mold exposure, other toxins. And it was a huge journey of trying to figure out how to get them better. And during the course of that, I was learning all this functional medicine, and my mind was just blown because I realized that my traditional training was just scratching the surface of what's going on in the body. And through that process, I also got exposed to the work about the ketogenic diet in epilepsy and saw that it was now being applied in serious mental health conditions as well, and that people were having these amazing turnaround stories, people who had been decades of psychosis, even taking the strongest antipsychotic medications, their illness was going away completely from being in a ketogenic state for 3 to 6 months, which is, when I first heard about that, I was in a lecture hall at McLean Hospital at Harvard, and I think there were probably 200 people in the room, and I think I was the only one that actually believed what the lecturer was saying.
I can imagine. I can
They
imagine.
were all
Yeah,
just like, oh,
right.
yeah,
Nutrition
great.
doesn't fix this.
Exactly. Yeah. And it would have been probably my response had I not already had the experience that I had with my kids. Sometimes it does take, your own, something big to sort of shake things up.
Absolutely.
Anyway,
Absolutely.
that sort of began my, when my kids started getting better, I had enough time and resources to devote to figuring out what I wanted to do with this information. And I think for the people that I work with, I really think that of all the interventions that I learned about in all of functional medicine, this is the most powerful one for the brain, for severe mental health issues. It's incredibly powerful, and it's not that hard. It doesn't require, going to six different independent labs and taking, 20 different supplements. Some of these, protocols that we come up with are really effective, but they can be hard to follow. And, takes a lot of executive functioning to follow these protocols. Whereas this is, people need to eat 3 times a day or two or three times a day anyway. If we just make the food such that they're going to be in a ketogenic state, and otherwise, whole foods and there's more to it than that, that we can have an enormous benefit on these very severe mental health conditions. And that's exactly what I've been seeing now for, about 4 or 5 years since I've been doing this in my practice. I'm just absolutely blown away by how powerful it is.
Incredible. I can't wait to dive into all the detail on you with this with on that with you. But I must say, like, the most incredible stories and the most incredible, thought leaders and movement makers are the ones that come with stories like you, you with your own family or your own health or your own children's struggles. And it really does. We sort of land in that place, don't we, to be taught these things to make the changes, and it's very hard to go through, and it's so incredibly heartbreaking to see. I've got two kids myself, and you it's the parents' worst nightmare to have something like these things come to and happen to your children. You wish it would happen to yourself.
But to be able to remedy and support and research and come out stronger at the end is just such an incredible thing. So, I really empathize with you. It's a really hard thing to go through.
Thank you.
So I want to first define before we dive into ketogenesis and how you've been using this in your practice and indications and how you see this, but how the term metabolic psychiatry. So explain this because I want to make sure that everyone starts to hear this more because the more reading I did on what you've been doing and what I'm seeing is I couldn't be more on board with this and I think it's we need to spread this wide and far.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it really highlights this fundamental bidirectional connection between metabolic health and brain health, that those are so closely connected, so intertwined, they're almost the same thing. That the way one's brain functions is almost a direct result of one's metabolic health. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One is that the brain is the most energy intensive organ in the body. Metabolism is a lot about making energy. It's not just that, it's other things too. It's about making building blocks and getting rid of waste and all of these various reactions. But a big part of it is about making energy. And the brain is about 2% of the weight of the body, and it's at any one point using 20 to 25% of the body's energy. And so when there's an energy problem in the body, it's going to be reflected in how the brain functions for sure. And you compound that with this rampant, almost epidemic of insulin resistance that we have based on the way we've been told to eat by our governments for the last, 50 or 60 years, to eat, 50% of our calories from carbohydrates, and 10% of our calories can be from simple sugar. And of course, people are eating a lot more than that in terms of the sugar. Huge percentages of our population have insulin resistance or prediabetes or diabetes. It's the majority of people in the US meet criteria for one of those three conditions, and they're just a continuum essentially. And so it's not a coincidence that we're also having a mental health crisis because these things are so connected. And
Absolutely.
there's actually, so there's data showing these bidirectional connections. If you have diabetes or cardiovascular disease or obesity, you're much more likely to end up with a mental health diagnosis. If you have a mental health diagnosis, you're much more likely to end up with diabetes or metabolic syndrome or obesity. We know that in adults, we see that, but that's really correlation. It's not necessarily causation. There's some hints of causation in the literature, though. There's this really interesting study where they looked at kids and followed their metabolic health until they got to be young adults. And they saw in the kids who had the highest insulin levels at age 9, there was a threefold increased risk in psychotic disorders like schizophrenia in their 20s. And so we can see that you start off with the metabolic health issue, bad, very severe mental health problem later. Same thing with the kids who gain the most weight during puberty, fivefold risk of increased risk of depression, major depressive disorder. So yeah, this is really concerning. And because our metabolic health is getting worse and worse every year, it's not something that's sort of stagnant. It's like it's absolutely exploding. Just one other statistic: the rate of diabetes in the US is, for type 2 diabetes, it's around 11 or 12% now, which is of adults. It's an enormous number. And unfortunately, quite a few kids too, but that's the number for adults. In 1960, it was 1%.
Wow, that is
So, I mean, we're just, we're
disastrous.
completely different metabolic creatures, organisms than they when we were, just, decades ago.
Absolutely.
This is,
My goodness.
yeah.
And kids, in my practice, my naturopathic practice, I'm seen at scary levels as well. I've just done a thesis on eating behaviors and dyadic responses with parents and in infants mainly, but it starts then, and it even starts in the mother. We have metabolic conditions during pregnancy, and then we obviously have tendencies through with children and then feeding patterns. So it starts with the parents, but the rise in insulin levels that I see in children, because I measure insulin levels in all my kids, because I need to know now, because after a few cases where we've missed things and haven't even measured for celiac disease and inflammation disorders, it's scary. I never ever saw 10 years ago in practice kids with high insulin levels. Absolutely
It,
blows me
it's amazing.
away.
It's amazing. Yeah. And it's, so So that's the fundamental issue, is that we've got this metabolic milieu, this crisis of metabolic health. And it's, we start scratching our heads. Well, I wonder why there's such a rise in anxiety and depression and autism and ADHD. And, I think the idea is that these things are closely connected. And, even this is even more challenging, because even people who have a normal insulin level, and you think, oh, well, this person's not insulin resistant, that doesn't mean that their brain is not insulin resistant. So this is another thing that's really important to understand, because organs become insulin resistant at different rates. And so someone could have a normal insulin, their normal hemoglobin A1C, and yet we know from good research that their brain could be insulin resistant. And brain insulin resistance is associated with all the major mental health issues. Schizophrenia, depression, bipolar, Alzheimer's disease is all associated with brain insulin resistance. And so we can still get benefits, even with people who look like they don't have an insulin resistance problem. We can still get benefits with this intervention with those people. And I've seen that now multiple times, where normal looking blood work, but the ketogenic diet is still incredibly powerful. And it doesn't just work through, bypassing insulin resistance. We can get into the mechanisms later if you want. But there's other mechanisms as well that, through which this diet works. And so it's not, it's a big part of the story, this insulin resistance, but it's not the only mechanism.
Yeah. All right. I think that's a good segue, actually, because let's sort of set the scene in terms of mechanisms. And we talk about primary fuel, and I have this sort of argument with people all the time. Well, primary fuel is glucose in the brain. So why do you need care? And so, but that I think explaining that sort of mechanisms around, how this works, and I think that would be a great lead in, and even testing and markers. We do a lot of metabolite testing here at SNH, and in my own practice as well. And so, any insight into how you look and without going straight into protocols, but even if you can tie in some of that with the mechanisms.
So in terms of mechanisms, the one we've been talking about so far, we'll start there. So the brain, largely does run on glucose. People are not wrong about that. And even in a deep ketogenic state, the brain still uses glucose. It's never going to stop doing that. So, but what we are providing, though, when the brain is insulin resistant, it could have glucose literally bathing these neurons, but the glucose can't get into the neurons for use as fuel because of that insulin resistance blockade. And ketones bypass that blockade. They don't need insulin to get into neurons to be used for fuel. So we're providing this additional source of fuel when the neuron is having an energetic crisis, which is happening right on a regular basis for most people. And that's manifesting as these mental health symptoms. But we're bypassing that energetic crisis with the ketones. They're this great additional source of fuel. And what that does is it reduces oxidative stress, because when the brain cells, when the neurons are starving for fuel, they're creating a lot of oxidative stress and inflammation. So we're going to reduce oxidative stress, reduce inflammation, and provide this additional source of fuel. That's all a very important mechanism. But the other really big important mechanism is that ketones are a signaling molecule as well as being a fuel molecule. And they signal to the mitochondria to go through mitochondrial biogenesis, to split and make more of themselves. And it causes the mitochondria to do more mitophagy, or, essentially recycling of mitochondria, the old non-functioning mitochondria, and making new, better functioning ones. And, mitochondria are, super important, as you know, not just for producing energy, but now, in the last, 10, 15 years, we've seen an explosion of research of all the other things that the mitochondria do, besides just make energy. So when you have these healthier, better functioning, and more numerous mitochondria, everything's going to work better. And the brain can literally heal from all of these insults that have been happening over the years, by, giving that signal to the mitochondria. We literally see the brain heal right in front of our eyes. It's absolutely astounding.
It really is. It really is. And obviously I'm preaching to the choir here, but it's I've seen it. Even I've had clients this year, two clients with Guillain-Barré syndrome, and the incredible change in diet with the recovery that they were doing was just astounding. And then that combination with some other therapies that we use in clinic, like hyperbaric, oh my gosh, you're just elevating that healing process so much. But the diet is, it's so astounding how the ketogenic model can work across so many different fields as well.
And of course, it started in epilepsy. And I just want to back up that claim about healing a little bit, because there's actually really good data in epilepsy that proves that this diet can heal the brain. So I just want to go into that for a second.
Absolutely.
The ketogenic diet's been used in epilepsy for over 100 years. It was invented to treat epilepsy in the Mayo Clinic in 1921. There were some precursor versions of it even 100 years before that for diabetes, and there's probably some version of it that was used by Hippocrates in ancient Greece, where they were, starving people of carbohydrates and really, fasting people to generate ketones and solve seizures. So anyway, we've had this strong data for epilepsy in kids, and it works even when the medications don't work. So that's been shown in randomized controlled trials. There's two Cochrane reviews that validate that it's a treatment that is effective even when medications are not effective. But what they've also seen in a few different studies now that they've published is that these kids who have a really good response to the ketogenic diet for their epilepsy, they can be on the diet for a few years, come off all their medications, get their seizures under control. After a few years of being on the diet, they can come off of the diet and the seizures never return, which means we've healed the problem. We have very few things in, medicine in general that truly heal, especially the brain. The brain is,
Absolutely.
often was used to be considered, not having the ability to generate new neurons. We can't generate new brain cells. We all know that that's not true anymore, but we still think of it as one of the organs that's the hardest to heal of them all. But this diet actually, there's real data showing that it heals an analogous, brain condition, epilepsy, which is astounding. And now we're seeing all of these, case reports and pilot trials in mental health, and just, literally thousands of stories of people who are turning their lives around, using this intervention.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. I'm going in so many different directions in my mind as you're saying this, but there's so many connections with brain, and when we think about mood and we think about gut and we think about all these things, and the ketogenic diet is helping support all of those energy systems because of the inflammation, because of the insulin, because of the it's regulating those systems. So like you say, it's one of these therapies that we can use that is changing function. And so a lot of these medications that we use, they are really merely just band-aiding function.
That's right.
It's very cool. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
So diving into more around or outside of the mechanisms now
Yeah.
into indications, and therefore looking at how you measure this. So how are you using continuous keto monitors? Are you using in terms of just the diet, are you using supplementation as well? And then how do you know that they are at that right level? So is there specific things that you would do prior to seeing clients or starting them on the ketogenic diet? So maybe let's just talk through some of those steps.
Sure. I do a whole lab panel looking at metabolic status and nutritional status, to before we start, just to give us a baseline. There's usually nothing on that panel that would rule someone out from doing this. And really, there's no mental health condition pretty much where I wouldn't want to try this if someone wants to do it. It works in all of the mental health conditions that it's been studied in so far. And so it's not like I can say, well, it works in bipolar, but it doesn't work in schizophrenia, or it works in depression, but it doesn't work in OCD. It works in all of them, including there's even data that it works in anorexia, which is another
I was
one
going to
that these
ask you
people.
about eating disorders, actually. Yeah, that's
Yeah,
my next question.
it's great for binge eating disorder. And people were a little scared to apply it in anorexia, but there was initially a case report, and actually know the people who are involved in that, essentially, someone who has been through anorexia treatment for, 15 years, never really got better, and a family member who was a physician suggested the ketogenic diet, and they found someone to implement it, and this person had an amazing response, and then actually was still having a little bit of food noise even after the ketogenic diet, and ended up doing a couple of ketamine sessions, and it all completely went away. And this person's now been in complete remission for at least 5 years now. And then they did a case series of another five women with weight restored anorexia and had also a tremendous response. Now there's two large trials going on at University of California, San Diego, where they're studying the ketogenic diet in young women with anorexia. And there's a whole basic science component. The investigator has a theory that people put themselves into an anorexic state partly to get into a ketogenic state. They can become addicted to kind of being in ketosis, because when you're, starving yourself, you're in ketosis, and it's actually treating a fundamental underlying anxiety that they have. And so that's part of the behavioral addiction to starving oneself for some of these young women, is that they don't realize it, but they're putting themselves into ketosis. And so the idea is, let's make a regimented rule of a plan where you can feel that just that way, but you don't need to starve yourself. And it's really effective, it seems.
That innate, and leading to reducing food, even when we're unwell, in any term, it's pushing us into that ketogenic state to then have more function in the mitochondria. It's
That's right.
incredible to signal. It makes
Yeah, it
sense.
is. Yeah, I mean, it's evolutionarily preserved signal. And of course, we evolve going in and out of ketosis. That's another thing that it's important to say, that it's not like we invented this in the modern world, or even in ancient Greece. Millions of years ago, our evolutionary forebears were absolutely going in and out of ketosis all the time, because there wasn't a steady supply of food, and ketones are a survival molecule. They're what allowed people, this allowed us to be here now. If there weren't ketones, we never would have made it, because they essentially allow the brain to function really well when there's no food. In fact, the brain functions better when there's no food, when the brain's in a ketotic state. And so it ensured survival. When there was no food for a few days, people didn't get hangry and tired and discouraged. They had ketones on board, and they said, we're going to figure out how to solve this problem. And they had the brain power to solve that problem.
I love that. I love that metabolic flexibility term. Just I explain it to my clients in that way because a lot I get a lot of clients who are insulin resistant and they are shaky and hangry and have all these symptoms in between meals. And I had clients that are actually fearful of not of having breaks between eating because they know how bad they can feel.
That's right.
And giving them the power back to be able to actually feel comfortable when they don't eat and have that fasting state and feel still clear. I know now my body is very good at metabolic flexibility, so I'm actually better if I can be in a ketonic state when I can be talking and speaking and with clients, I'm much more clearer. But seeing and showing clients how that feels is very empowering for them. They are blown away how they can be so clear with no food.
I agree 100%. And I had that same experience myself. I was definitely, before I learned about all this, I was eating, trying to be healthy, but I would eat a lot of fruit, and I was definitely insulin resistant. I had to eat 5 or 6 times a day to be able to keep my brain going. And then, I went through a period where I said, decided to do this, lowered my carbohydrates, but I also did some fasting, became metabolically flexible. And it is not just empowering, it's liberating. I mean, you feel trapped. I used to have to take snacks with me everywhere I went, because I knew I might need one, to be able to function. And now I feel like, well, I'm walking around with all the fuel I need. I don't have to worry about that anymore. It's a very liberating feeling.
It is, yeah. I've been trailing and hiking in the Flatirons here in Colorado, and I can leave and just like not have breakfast and walk out on an hour and a half hike, and I know I'll be fine. I have great amounts of energy, and that
That's
for
right.
me is like I can live my life and I can be metabolically flexible, and I don't have to worry about when my next meal is going to come.
Right.
So what I know you said that there's no conditions as such that will exclude a ketogenic diet, but is there any that you can think of that you would maybe go in a different direction first or not
Sure.
do ketogenic?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't want to overstate it. I mean, if someone is in the midst of an acute psychiatric crisis, we probably wouldn't say, let's do a ketogenic diet right now. If someone is acutely psychotic and behaviorally out of control. They can't, first of all, make the decision to do this kind of big
Of
intervention at that
course.
moment and probably can't follow it. So, an acute medical or psychiatric crisis definitely would be something we wouldn't do. If someone's really underweight from their anorexia, I think most people are not bold enough to do that. Although I did just speak with some dietitians over the weekend. I was speaking at a conference with dietitians, and they were telling me that they do sometimes, if someone is at the end with anorexia and they're have a feeding tube, there are sometimes now people who are saying, "Well, this is our chance. Let's do the ketogenic diet as a last-ditch effort." And sometimes it's helpful because anorexia is the most fatal of all the psychiatric conditions, actually.
So sad.
So, there, and there's a few others. There's a couple of medications that we can't combine the ketogenic diet with. Some of the, there's one diabetes med, class of diabetes medications, the SGLT2 inhibitors. A few other things where there's relative concern, but we still could forge ahead. But generally, in terms of like which psychiatric diagnosis, we really can use it in almost any of them. There's probably the most data on bipolar disorder, though. So that's, one where it really seems to shine the most. But we're seeing incredible benefits in actually these chronic psychotic disorders as well, for which there's really no good treatments. The antipsychotics sometimes reduce symptoms, but they have so many side effects, and they often don't take away the symptoms either. So it's frequently people are coming to me, they're on two or three antipsychotic medications at once, plus some mood stabilizers, and there's so many side effects, and they're still having all the symptoms.
I see
And
the
yeah, and so, with those folks, it's really a great intervention because we can get their energy back. We can start the process of lowering these medications and hopefully getting them off many of them. And people get their energy back, they get their thinking and their cognition back. And then often, if people are able to stick with it, those psychotic symptoms start going away as well. And sometimes they go completely away on the ketogenic diet, which is just amazing. These people, again, just like epilepsy, where the medications didn't work, this intervention can work.
And it's so accessible, and this is why I love talking about this. I was talking about a co to a colleague yesterday, because I've interviewed many people who are in the research space of treatment res resistant depression and body dysmorphia, and we talk about ketamine a lot, we talk about psilocybin a lot, but they're very quite inaccessible treatments because of the cost, because of the accessibility of country, regulations, things like that, and training, having good centers. But a ketogenic diet can be followed by anyone and can be accessed by anyone, in, as long as you're doing it in a way that is suitable for you and you have some, guidance in that way. It's for anyone, and that's why I feel like this is so powerful as well, powerful treatment.
I agree 100%. I mean, we're putting the power back in the individual's hands that, this is not, I mean, of course it's really helpful and really important to get some guidance from a practitioner or a clinician who understands how to do this to so that
Of
you can do
course.
it right. It's easy for people to say, "Oh, I tried a ketogenic diet, it wasn't for me," and you found out, they tried it for a week or two and they probably weren't in ketosis. So it is really important to work with someone who can educate you or really figure out how to educate yourself. But once that education process occurs, yeah, this person now has complete control over their health, as opposed to needing a clinician to prescribe them something and do a test and do a procedure. I mean, it, talk about, really helping the, the grassroots from a grassroots level. I mean, this is food, and it's,
It's the
done
basics. It's not the
just the,
shiny things.
yeah, done just the right way. It really is the most powerful treatment.
So in when you're seeing clients as patients, and are you seeing any specific compliance issues, or difficulties in the beginning? And are you having to use exogenous ketones? Are you having to do So is there certain parameters that you see that are commonality among treating patients?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, we have to get someone interested. That's the art of it in some ways is, I'm talking about something that they've, What? It's same response as the clinicians. Our whole culture has the same response. Are you kidding me? This is just food. How could it possibly do something that, all of these, expensive medications and doctors who've done, decades of training can't fig do for me? How could it possibly, the solution be in food? So there's a lot of convincing and education that has to happen at first. And what we often do see, actually, very common, is that families will learn about this and be very convinced. They'll learn all about it, and then they'll be trying very hard to convince their family member to do this. And often they are able to convince their family member. And then, of course, it's not the easiest thing to give up these addictive foods. People come in. We have a center, a program where people come in and stay with us, and that makes it a lot easier. I also do this with outpatients who are doing this at home, and to do it on your own at home, even with a lot of advice and help, is a little more challenging. It definitely can be done. But for people who have a harder time with their executive functioning, they're having a lot of symptoms, they may be having a lot of side effects from the medications they're already on. This program really can be helpful because they come in, they see me, we have this, wonderful program director, social worker who does therapy with them. We have a dietitian right on site who's crafting the meal plan, and then we have a chef who's making delicious ketogenic food. And
That's really
so
cool.
that makes it a lot easier for people. And we use a lot of technology. We use continuous glucose monitors. We don't have access to continuous ketone monitors. I can't wait until we can get them in the US, but we don't have them yet. But we do check blood ketone levels at least once a day. We check body composition and follow that parameter, and then we follow their lab work. And we're also measuring their, mental health rating scales and functional rating scales. And, the results we're getting are absolutely amazing. When people do the whole program, and we can talk a little more about what the whole program is, because it's not only food. There's more to it than that. A lot of adjunctive things that really go along with the diet that can really support it and make it even more powerful.
I absolutely would love to dive into that. But just to sort of have a completion around this, timing of these sorts of protocols. A lot of people ask me, oh, am I going to be on this forever? Or is it pulsed in and out? Is my cholesterol going to go through the roof? Like all these simple things that people are worried about, right? And it's like, well, don't you want to get better? Like, you're just, So what do you, say to those sorts of things when you're asked?
Well, if they're using it for a more serious mental health condition, I tell them that we just don't know the answer to how long they need to do it. The research just, we don't have enough science about that yet for mental health. I do talk about the kids who, only need to do it for a few years with epilepsy, but I say, well, that's also a different disorder, and it's kids whose brains are a little more plastic than an adult. And so I can't promise that they're going to be able to go off the diet and, after a few years and have retain all their benefits. But it's possible. And I do know a couple of adults who've done it for a few years and come off and are able to retain their benefits. So I've seen it a few times. I just can't promise that. So what I say is, first you got to try it for 3 months and see if you're getting benefits. And usually people do, they're getting benefits and they want to keep going. Sometimes people say, well, how long? And I say, well, we just don't know. Now that you're getting benefits, let's see how good you're going to feel, after a year of doing this. And we can keep lowering medication. Some we can get you off more medication. Let's just see how good this can get before we start thinking about, the whole end of the story. It took probably many years to get to this situation. It's going to take some time to heal as well. We have to be patient, which again, in our culture, hard. We're not, we don't learn patience, and none of us practice it enough as we should, right? So, regarding the cholesterol issue, I have spent a lot of time educating myself about, what all this means. There's a few things you can say. Number one is that if you're starting off metabolically unhealthy and overweight, carrying extra weight, this is absolutely going to lower your 10-year cardiac risk, being in a ketogenic state. Even if your LDL cholesterol goes up a little bit, all the other parameters get better. If you're starting off thin and somewhat fit and you're exercise and you do this, there is this subclass of people called lean mass hyper-responders who have a very high LDL on a ketogenic diet, and they have a very high HDL as well, and extremely low triglycerides, very good low insulin. And there's a lot of research being done on those folks, and it looks like this does not confer cardiac risk, even with these super high LDLs. But that person would always have the option to take something to lower their LDL cholesterol, whether it be an herbal supplement or a medication if they wanted to. I generally would recommend not to, because I think, it's not necessary. But if someone was concerned and they were otherwise feeling good, we're not trapped at that point. We don't have to go off the diet. There's definitely options at that point. But there's also reassuring data that even with a very high LDL, if as long as those other parameters are in place and there's low inflammation, that we're not adding cardiac risk.
I absolutely agree with you. I have many a client come to me with these concerns, and I do all the homocysteine, we do the folate, we do the B12, we do the metabolites for those as well, and we do the high sensitivity CRP, we do as you say, insulin, and it's subsequent of that rising, the fats of the diet that is going to rise the LDL. But if everything else and genetics look good, and we do a cardiac panel, and it's all in the data, isn't it? It's matching that, and it's a very interesting concept, like you said, these hyper responders. And we also know the data around needing to have cholesterol for, this is the whole premise of what we're talking about today, for having good mental health and good, brain function.
I mean, cholesterol is essential for hormone synthesis and, membranes of all the brain cells, of course, incredibly important molecule. And, it's not to say that we can guarantee that, a high LDL with other factors is fine. It's not. I mean, there's definitely some concern about high LDL if you're not otherwise taking care of all the other parameters. But what I'm talking about is high LDL in isolation. And also, we get this NMR fractionated cholesterol panel sometimes where we can see what type of LDL. And there's the small, dense ones that are more dangerous. There's these large, fluffy ones. If they have the right pattern, that's another reassuring sign. And finally, if someone really was worried still and they weren't sure if they wanted to go on a medication, we can always get a cardiac calcium score or even a CT angiogram to really see is there any. That's the gold standard, not LDL measurements at all of heart disease. The gold standard is looking at the vessels, which now is accessible with imaging and without invasive imaging. So,
Absolutely. No, I love that you comment on all of this. It's so good. I see in practice now, actually, in all honesty, I'm more worried about two lower levels of cholesterol and people on medications, because I know to the detriment that is to the brain and the hormones.